Oh, Radio 191 FM podcast? Nice one.
You're tuned into R1 News at 1. Every weekday from 1 till 2 p.m., our dedicated news team brings you the hard-hitting stories, interviews, and culture pieces from across Otepoti, Dunedin.
Welcome to R1 News at 1. I'm your host, Charlie Cunningham, and today is Thursday the 29th of August. And coming up this hour, I have The Bulletin, an interview with Green MP Francisco Hernandez, and the weather. But first, we have a sweater with Coward's Garage.
Here are the R1 News at 1 headlines.
This is the R1 News Bulletin for Thursday the 29th of August. I'm Charlie. And in national news, Darlene Tana has filed legal proceedings against the Green Party following party-hopping allegations. One News reports, Darlene Tana is seeking a full judicial review of the Green Party and specifically its co-leaders. As the now independent MP faces significant allegations of party-hopping after exiting the party earlier this year. Tana's lawyers have also applied for an interim injunction in hopes of stopping the Green Party's special general meeting from going ahead, which was where Tana's fate within Parliament was meant to be decided. This meeting was called to see if the Green Party could use the party-hopping law to completely expel Tana from Parliament. Green Party co-leader Chloe Swarbrick revealed these proceedings in an emergency media conference at Parliament earlier yesterday. Swarbrick stated that these legal proceedings have left the party in an unprecedented situation. Swarbrick told the media, quote, "At approximately midday today, we received further notice that a hearing has been set down on the interim injunction at 10 a.m. tomorrow in the Auckland High Court. These legal moves from Tana have come as the newest twist in their current scandal, which started in March after migrant work exploitation allegations at their husband's business came to light. Tana sought this judicial review of Swarbrick, Minima Davidson and the Green Party, and Swarbrick has also added that the Greens' lawyers will be working pro bono in this case. Quote, "Throughout this process, we have continued to centre our Green kaupapa. As these proceedings are currently before the court, I will not be able to make any further comments specifically about this case at this time." Unquote. Around 200 Green Party delegates were set to vote on Tana's future at this special general meeting on Sunday, which would have concluded a month-long deliberation from the party. When Swarbrick was questioned whether she found the newest twist in the saga disappointing, she simply replied with, "It is what it is." Half New Zealand Te Whate Ora has started implementing a voluntary redundancy scheme, Azaria Howe of the New Zealand Herald reports. Half New Zealand's chief executive, Margie Upper, confirmed rumours of a voluntary redundancy scheme being implemented in an email to staff. Upper stated, We are not opening up voluntary redundancy more widely at this stage. However, we will enable any staff to pre-register the interest if they were to become eligible to apply in the future. Despite several initiatives underway, Upper noted that these efforts will not, quote, resolve this financial issue or help ensure we have the right people in the right places. The Public Service Association Union revealed that Health NZ has issued a call for voluntary redundancy applications to specialists working in health administration, advisory and knowledge roles. PSA National Secretary Kerry Davies criticised the agency's actions, stating Health NZ is, quote, "being forced to meet the government's unhinged and unplanned defunding of healthcare, no matter the consequences." Davies warned that the country risks losing essential workers responsible for maintaining medical records and scheduling procedures. Upper acknowledged that a significant proportion of Health NZ's expenses are related to staffing, emphasising a need to review its size and structure. She stated, "We are therefore providing the opportunity for eligible staff to consider voluntary redundancy, ahead of likely formal change consultation processes over the coming months." Health Minister Dr. Shane Rethi confirmed the voluntary redundancy process, describing it as part of a broader strategy to improve efficiency and focus resources on frontline healthcare, stating, "As the Commissioner has stated very clearly, the clinical frontline will not be cut or reduced, and Health NZ plans are to strengthen it. Expressions of interest in voluntary redundancy will be open until September 13th, with applications assessed individually by Health NZ." ARPA clarified that seeking voluntary redundancies does not reflect an individual's performance and acknowledged the challenges involved for staff. Voluntary redundancy programs have also been implemented in other public sectors, including the police, Oranga Tamariki, the Ministry of Social Development, and the Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment. These actions align with the government's directive to reduce back office roles and increase efficiency across the public sector. An Upper Hutt brewery has been told to remove its coupe beer from sale after it was found to be in breach of advertising standards, RNZ reports. The Aro Brewing Age of Discovery series named its New Zealand IPA Coupe after the Polynesian navigator. Coupe is a prominent figure in Māori mythology and oral history. Known as the first person to discover Aotearoa from Hawaiki. Other historical figures in the Age of Discovery series are Christopher Columbus and Ferdinand Magellan, known for colonising the Americas and the Philippines respectively. The beer range are named for each of the figures and the cans feature stylistic portraits. The Advertising Standards Authority received and upheld two complaints about the product's packaging and promotion that said it was cultural appropriation and exploited and demeaned Coupe's mana and that of his descendants and places associated with him. The ASA ruled the beer was likely to cause serious offence. This is after Māori cultural advisor and tikanga expert Dr. Kararai Tiana Tehuru raised concerns about the product and its promotion, describing it as highly offensive. Te Reo Māori Wardens chairperson Mariana Peka, one of those behind the submission, said it was particularly upsetting that Hitupuna is being used to promote alcohol given the harm it has caused amongst Māori. Te Aro Brewing said it never intended to offend anyone, and at no time considered the possibility that anyone might be offended by naming a beer after a historical figure. This has been the Awa News Bulletin for Thursday the 29th of August. Today's bulletin was written by Charlie Cunningham and Jemima Lorimer and read to you by Charlie Cunningham.
Those were the headlines for today on R1 News at 1. Catch up on previous R1 News wherever you get your podcasts or head to r1.co.nz/news.
Thank you for listening into the R1 News Bulletin today. And just a reminder that we have an interview with Green MP Francisco Hernandez and the weather coming up. But first, we have the Naked and Famous with Youngblood. Welcome back to R1 News at 1. Up next for you, we have an interview with Dunedin's newest Green MP, Francisco Hernandez, who currently holds the tertiary education portfolio along with many others. And he was also the president of the OUSA back in his day. Hernandez was sworn into Parliament earlier this year and has a very strong passion for climate change and student rights. My fellow newsie Tristan and I sat down with him to better understand how Hernandez wants to serve his communities throughout his parliamentary roles. And I hope you enjoy the interview.
You're previously the president of the OUSA. And I'm curious whether experiences from being in that position have influenced how you run for yourself in the Green Party, and if there are any similarities between that position and now.
Yeah, I think fundamentally when you've been in a role that kind of represents people, it kind of gives you a good grounding on the kind of issues and how to talk and represent to people. So, you know, I've certainly taken the lessons that I've learned from when I was OUSA president to, you know, how I conduct myself as an elected representative. And also having been, you know, a student union president kind of means that there's like a certain level of rapport when you meet with, you know, students when you meet with other student association leaders. You know you've been one of them. So they kind of understand that you know where they're coming from. So it's certainly helped, yeah.
And as a Green Party spokesperson for tertiary education, what do you believe the main issues affecting students are at the moment?
I think the same, it's really terrible because the same issues that were affecting students a decade ago affected them like 20 years ago and 30 years ago. You know, like people have not fundamentally solved the issues that students were facing. And the big one is like student poverty, you know, the people's inquiry into student well-being led by Chloe Swarbrick, now our party co-leader found that students are regularly having to choose between heating and eating. I mean, two-thirds can't afford to, like, regularly pay bills, you know, or students out there struggling to survive. And it's getting even worse. You know, when I've been talking to the student union representatives from around the country, they're telling me that the food bank usage has exploded just in the past year alone. So, yeah, the student poverty is a big issue, cost of living crisis. But also things like course quality is also an issue, student loans. So same as it always was, you know.
Yeah, it doesn't seem much has changed. And what are some key policies you're currently advocating for within the Green Party?
Yeah, so look, the main thing that we're still advocating as the Greens is the concept of a universal study wage, because, you know, students shouldn't need to be forced to choose between paying a certain bill or, like, getting to lectures. Students should have what they need. Everyone should have what they need to thrive, right? But we've kind of normalized, and to some extent, and it's not students that are doing this, it's the kind of older generation have kind of glamorized the idea of student poverty. But, you know, the reality on the ground is that students don't actually want to live in, like, cold, shitty, damp houses. Students don't want to, like, eat out of, like, you know, $2 noodle cans. It's they don't want to do any of that. And we need to normalize the idea that students should have what they need to thrive. And one of the ways that we can get that is the universal, you know, study wage. But there's also things we can do around the margins to get towards that. So I want to look at how we can extend the winter energy payment to students, because it's really weird that people who are on the benefit can get it, people who are pensioners can get it, but students have been excluded from the winter energy payment, which is really unjustifiable in my view, because students are living in cold, damp housing, and students are struggling to pay the bills. So they should get the winter energy payment.
Mm. Well, I believe that gaining a young audience or demographic within the political space is important when reaching out for voters. What are your plans for attracting this audience, and whether it be in tertiary education or not?
I think one of the ways that we can attract the people, I mean, you know, the Greens already have a healthy portion of the youth vote if you look at, you know, the voter data. But it doesn't mean we can start slating and take the youth vote for granted. And one of the ways that we can, you know, continue to engage young people is to advocate for policies and solutions that young people are facing. So, you know, the Greens have been quite active in the mental health space. Like, Chloe has been particularly active in that kind of cross-party work around, you know, addiction, around the ADHD diagnosis. And we'll continue to talk for the issues that young people are concerned about, climate change, student poverty, well, just general youth poverty, and making sure everyone has what they need to thrive and survive. And another component is not just about talking about things that young people are interested in, but meeting them where they're at, like in the platforms they're at, in youth spaces. You know, there's a lot of communities out there that are online, you know, through Twitch or Twitter or whatever, and we need to meet people where they're at, whether that's Discord or, you know, like at Polyfests or wherever they are. We need to be where they're at and also talking about issues that they care about, and that's how we'll keep winning the youth vote.
And kind of following on from what we've just been talking about, I was just wondering, how do you stay connected with your constituents in Dunedin and ensure their voices are heard in Parliament?
Yeah, so I guess one of the ways that I stay connected is by ensuring that, you know, that I'm here as often as I can be, and also that I'm still out there doing things in the community, doing things like going to the weekly Palestine rallies. I mean, obviously I'm not there weekly because we've been in Christchurch quite a lot, actually. But, yeah, just going out and continuing to be a member of my community and making sure that I'm meeting with, you know, the elected representatives on the ground, like the OESA president and the OPSA president. Yeah, just trying to keep on top of what's happening here in Dunedin, reading the local news and just being a regular member of the community, really.
As a Filipino MP who has keen interest in gaining the Filipino vote, I want to know what specific policies you have planned that can help with this cause.
Yeah, so, like, Filipinos are, you know, diverse.
Yeah.
In our kind of interests, in our kind of ideological leanings, and we're diverse geographically where we are around New Zealand. But one of the things that I've been doing is coming to each of them outside of the election year and just engaging on the basis of respect. I'm telling them, I'm here. If you need any kind of community services or if you need someone to be an advocate for you in Parliament, I'll do it. And I think one of the things that I've been proud to do is last week I was able to get cross-party support for a motion to kind of express unanimous support from the Parliament of New Zealand and the people of New Zealand to the people in the Philippines who've been affected by Typhoon Karina, also known as Typhoon Gemi. So just by staying connected to the kind of what the needs of the community are and advocating for things that, you know, that we know will help the Filipino community, that's how we plan to win the Filipino vote, is by engaging and being responsive and just being all over the country, really.
I think it's awesome that there's a Filipino MP in New Zealand, because the Filipino community is growing, like, over here.
That's right.
Having a representative in, like, a bigger, like, structure of government is really, like, it helps a lot. So thank you.
it's about giving people a voice, right? And it's really good that with Paulo Garcia, he's the national MP, and that we can kind of cover the community across the ideological spectrum, because, you know, there's, like, a lot of the Filipino community are conservatives, so they'll feel more comfortable going to someone who does have kind of conservative politics. But, you know, there's an emerging generation of younger Filipinos who are kind of progressive, and there's also, you know, older generation of Filipinos who are also politically progressive. We shouldn't just stereotype depending on kind of generational leanings, and they're more comfortable going to a representative who does have those progressive values in common. So, you know, we can kind of cover the community from both ends, which is really helpful.
Yeah. Just to follow up from that, how often do you go back to the Philippines, and what kind of aspects from the Philippines would you like to bring from here, here to New Zealand?
I've not been back for a while, actually. The borders shut for like 3 years, so
I wasn't really
able to come back in that period. But one of the things that, and, you know, it's increasingly kind of becoming common here, is the Filipino food. I mean,
you're right.
There's like three Filipino restaurants in Dunedin now, and back in my day, just 10 years ago when I was OUSA president, there was only one. And now there's three in Dunedin. And in Ashburn, like, the face, I don't think people realize the extent to which the face of rural New Zealand is changing. If you go to, like, Ashburton, there's, like, so many Filipinos there. If you go to, like, a Catholic mass there, it's, like, most of the parishioners are Filipino.
I mean, I can relate. When we moved down here in 2009, we were living on a farm, and we met, like, most of the community people, like, Filipino people that we met, they're also working on the farm and all that. They're all very rural. Not many of them would live in towns, or if they did, I mean, you know, it would just be very few of them, but we were all very much, like strongly connected.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the face of rural New Zealand is changing, and, like, people are not going to recognize rural New Zealand, like, in 50 years' time. Well, they will recognize it, but it'll be, like, kind of more youthful and, you know, browner.
No, I agree with the food.
Yeah.
Very much so. I wish Jollibee was here.
Me too.
Well, speaking of the future, how do you envision your future within the Green Party and New Zealand politics overall?
I've only really just gotten in. This is my third month as a member of Parliament, and I'm still getting to grips with what it is to be an elected representative. So, yeah, I want to just keep doing my job and keep serving the people of Dunedin and the people of New Zealand, and particularly the Filipino community here. And then, you know, hopefully contribute to the Greens leading the formation of a, you know, the next progressive government, and really making this government a one-term one, because they're doing a lot of shit, man. You know, they're firing a lot of people in the public service that are really core to how this country functions. They're starving the health sector of funding, and yeah, I think they're doing just a lot of awful, nasty stuff. And I think, in particular, the kind of assaults that they're doing on Te Tiriti is really taking the country backwards. So, you know, for all those reasons, I'm really, really wanting to work to make this a one-term government. And then what happens next and what happens with my political career is really secondary to that goal, to be quite frank. Like, if you know, if somehow losing my seat meant that we could get a one-term national government, I'd make that trade instantly.
And as we previously mentioned, you were the OUSA president here at Otago University. Was that the start of your political career, or was it before or after? Or could you tell us a little bit how you got your start?
Yeah, well, look, you know, politics is fundamentally about service to me. And the stuff that we were doing at OUSA was just an extension of the kind of work that I wanted to do helping students on the ground. So I was part of a student club that no longer exists called Food Not Bombs. And what we did was, you know, we used to take food that would have been thrown to the dumpster and just make soup out of it and feed it to students. But becoming part of OUSA was just, I guess, an extension of how we take that idea of, like, taking food that would have been thrown away and putting it in a framework where it would be institutionalized. So when I got into OUSA, we put in free breakfast, and how we got the kind of bread and the supplies we needed for that free breakfast was by talking to the supermarkets and talking to the bakeries close by that would have just thrown the food away, and instead we were able to, like, serve it to the students. So I guess I would say that was the start of my political career. My formal political career was being OUSA president, but I would extend it to, I guess, a longer tradition of service and wanting to help the people in Dunedin and help the student community here. And, you know, since then I've worked for the Greens in Parliament and also worked across the public service, and that's all kind of part of the same thread, really.
And kind of as a last question, what does a typical day in your life look like as a Green MP?
It really depends whether it's like a sitting week or a non-sitting week, because if it's a sitting day, then all your activities like basically revolve around Parliament. So, you know, you kind of get up, you go to work, and we've got the first meeting of the day is usually what's called morning call, which is at 8:30, and that's where we as Green MPs discuss what's going on in the news, like what stories we can pitch and, you know, what we can do to try and overtake the government. And then my day would be, if it's a sitting day, my day would be filled with, you know, meetings around Parliament or like working on speeches. I'm on a select committee as well, which is the petition select committee, so doing prep work for that is important as well. And if I have speeches in the House, making sure that I'm preparing for it as well. This role has a lot of reading on it, you know, like, because you have to dig up information about the government, and that means going through like heaps and heaps of paperwork, like OIA requests or the replies that you get back from written questions. You spend a lot of your day talking and meeting with people as well, like talking to the media or talking to members of the public or like union leaders or whatever, just so you can get a good view and stay connected with what's happening on the ground. So yeah, no day looks the same really, but yeah, a lot of talking to people and a lot of late nights, because we, you know, at Parliament we usually start at 8 and we finish at 10 p.m. and we physically have to be on the precinct until we're allowed to go.
Yeah. Thank you
for
coming.
Your time.
Thank you very much.
Long live Radio 1.
Yeah, same.
Are there any final words or anything you want to say to the students who, or non-students who may be listening to this radio?
Yeah, I guess, you know, my message is get involved. We have seen that this government is intending to prosecute their war on nature and their war on climate and their war on people and their war on titiriti. Like, I think, you know, I think being a student is, like, tough, and there's, like, a lot of competing demands on your attention, and, you know, like, I realize you can't be on the barricades 24/7. That's not what we're asking for. But if you've got kind of the energy or the spoons to get involved, you should try and get involved, because it's actually a lot of fun being part of a movement and, like, feeling like you can be with other like-minded people to help drive the change that we need as a country. So really, I encourage students to get involved in, you know, whatever in your community, you get involved in a political party. If you're inclined to join one, you can get involved just with what's happening underground. You know, keep your eyes open, keep your ears open, and get involved. You know, submit to stuff when stuff is coming up. Go to marches when there's stuff coming up, because it might not feel like it, but every person who stands up is like it's a tiny grain of sand in the kind of gears of government. But if enough of us kind of stand up and jam the gears with our sand, then we can force it all to grind to a halt, you know, and really make this a one-term government. So, yeah, please get involved, and yeah, we're here for you, man.
Well, again, thank you so much for taking the time to sit and have an interview with us. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And that was our interview with Dunedin's newest Green MP, Francisco Hernandez. And I hope you guys all enjoyed it. And as we mentioned throughout that interview, he was the president of the OUSA back in his time here at Otago. And what I've got coming up for you now is the song that he made for his campaign. And I just want you guys to see if you can guess what parody it was. It was quite a popular song back in his day, about 11 years ago. But I hope you guys enjoy.
Both the random style. Random style. Running for prayers is how I'll make a difference. Running for president to bring about some changes.
Kept my promises, mother officer. As mother officer.
Let's get some better.
The R1 News at 1 weather forecast.
Welcome to the R1 News weather forecast for the 29th of August. Today is Thursday, and the weather's kind of changed up a little bit today. I'm sure, as we all saw, it was quite sunny this morning, and now some clouds have started to settle in, but we've still got some blue skies, so there's at least that to look forward to. And coming up this afternoon, there's going to be more cloudy periods with the potential for some odd showers, and there's going to be some northwesterly winds, so be brave when you're out there walking, especially through campus. It can get quite congested. And thank you for listening to today's weather forecast.
The R1 News at 1 weather forecast.
And that has been the R1 News show for Thursday, the 29th of August. I'm your host, Charlie, and thank you very much for tuning in today. Really appreciate it. I am here, usually with my co-host, Jonah, every Thursday from 1 till 2. So always coming every Thursday. And make sure to tune in tomorrow for the Friday News show at 1 p.m. Thank you.
You've been listening to R1 News at 1, here on Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. The R1 News is uploaded daily wherever you get your podcasts. Or head to r1.co.nz/news to get yourself all caught up. Additionally, you can follow R1 News NZ to keep up to date with all our newsworthy happenings.
You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. Find audio like this online at r1.co.nz or wherever quality podcasts congregate.